This is Armando Mill with you, with the positive mind. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And we're always talking to you about communicating and trying to find ways to communicate. And I have with me in the studio Stephanie Dombra and also Dr. David Biro. Dr. David Biro has written a book that I find fascinating called The Language of Pain. Language of Pain itself, huh? Talk about the language of love. We talk about that. We talk about the language of hate. The language of pain. I find that kind of fascinating. Pain isolates and it divides. It robs the sufferer of language. It erodes lines of communication and it builds a wall between those in pain and those who could only witness it. Dr. David Biro himself was diagnosed at the age of 30 with a rare life-threatening blood disease, and he went through a bone marrow transplant, and he was determined to share his experience with other people, and he does that in this book, The Language of Pain. But here's the problem we have about pain. Pain, so difficult to communicate. And yet, you know, it's so familiar to you in so many ways. I mean, sometimes we hear people complaining about their aches and pains, and we don't want to hear it. We don't even want to know about it, you know? And then there are other times that you ask somebody, like you ask your dog, what's the matter? And your dog's whining. He can't tell you. I got a pain in my kidney. He can't tell you. He can't. I mean, so animals can't communicate their pain. Humans with their language can. But how do we communicate it? What gets in our way? What's this whole issue about communication of pain? Let me introduce Dr. David Biro. David, welcome to WBAI.
Thanks for having me here.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. I enjoyed what you had to say because I think you write well. I mean, your language is part of your life. You could tell. You find words easy to work with. Talk to us about pain. Tell us a little about it.
Well, I think you're absolutely right that this is a strange and sort of paradoxical thing, that it is something that we are very intimate with. In fact, we alone are intimate with our own pains. And yet, when we try to sort of hone in on it and try to put it into some kind of words and language, it's very difficult. So yes, it is ours, and it is something we are intimate with, but it's extremely difficult to hone in on and to represent in a way that others can understand. And it's not just ordinary people. Even those that are really great with language, and I actually came to this subject first by looking at how some of our greatest writers have dealt with this experience. And they too are sometimes stymied when it comes to trying to describe pain. So it's not easy for the language professional. So it's certainly not as easy for the ordinary person.
You know, one of the things I always think about is women. Stephanie, I want to ask you about this as well. Women describing childbirth. You could say to somebody, what's the worst pain you ever had? And sometimes people will put at the top of the list, childbirth, as the most excruciating pain. And almost every man I know, when he hears it, he goes, yeah, I have no idea what you're really talking about. So there is a pain that's such an intimate pain because you're there probably married to somebody and you're trying to tell them what you feel, but you can't really describe it in some way. And even after you describe it for years later, the man still has no idea what you're talking about. Why? Why? We've had that description. Why? Why can't we get that? Why can't we understand it?
I mean, the real problem is that, for the most part, pain is something that's inside us. It's something we can't sort of see. It's something that at many times it's really hard to even think about. There's a great example in a wonderful memoir by William Styron, who tries to describe his pain at the brink of a great depression, a breakdown. And he starts to say, well, it sort of feels like this, and then sort of like this, but no. I can't describe. Again, this great writer sort of can't ultimately get at the content of his pain.
But his pain is psychological pain.
Psychological.
So we're talking about, so let me just distinguish while I have you.
Okay.
There's physical pain, mm-hmm. which you physically feel.
Mm-hmm.
There's two kinds of pain, right? Acute and chronic.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the only two kind? Is there another kind, like that Swedish pain or something?
No, I think that's it.
Acute and chronic. What's the distinction between the two?
It's just that acute is something that is sort of momentary, while chronic sort of continues on.
It continues on. So people have chronic pain and they have acute pain, mm-hmm. and both. They need to, in some way, try to communicate to somebody. Now, there's a lot of reason why there's skepticism when you try to describe your pain. Ever since I was a kid, if I ever talked about my pain, people were skeptical. Because,
mm-hmm.
first of all, you know, why are you not going to school? I'm sick. Oh, my head hurts. Right? Really, I want to go out and play. So now the mother's thrown into the role of being skeptical about the child. Description of pain. But if you describe pain enough and you would describe it accurately, you get not to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
You could collect disability. You could, you know, you could stay home from a job.
Mm-hmm.
You could have any number of things that work for you if you can misrepresent your pain, as well as you could go to a pain doctor and get great medication. Stuff that gets you high, stuff that you could sell on the street. So there's a lot of skepticism about pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's why I think, Stephanie, we're lucky to be in the psychology business, because people rarely come in here and falsify their pain. They don't get anything out of it. You know, they have no reason to lie to us about the pain of their depression, you know, unless we're reporting to somebody.
Well, that's true. Some people do the system with disability as well. Uh-huh. They try to get their disability checks by saying they're not functioning, they're in deep depression. Occasionally, but I understand, usually it's based on physical pain that people get their disabilities.
So we'll stick with physical pain for a moment. Although, you know, when I think about Frida right now Frida was the wife of...
Frida Kahlo?
Yeah.
The wife of Diego Rivera, the Mexican painter.
She was in an excruciating amount of pain. Mm-hmm. Was it physical pain or emotional pain or both?
Both.
It was both. Right? I remember her being carried, you know, from where she had to go. What was wrong with her?
First of all, she had polio when she was a little girl.
Yeah.
And she had a really bad accident on a bus in which a pole on the bus sort of impaled her, essentially, damaged her spinal, her back, her spine, and from then on she would be in excruciating pain. She also had pain. Her marriage with Diego didn't go very well all the time. She also really wanted to have a child, which she could not have.
So we're dealing with three kinds of pain.
We're dealing with a lot of pain.
We have acute, we have psychological, and we have chronic.
We have chronic.
All three. Now, when she goes to a painting,
right.
when she goes to a canvas, all of that is communicated her artwork.
And what's interesting is she uses the same kind of imagery and symbolism, the same kind of symbolism, whether she's describing the physical kind of pain or the psychological pain. And this is one of the reasons why I sort of combine the two. And I think it's reasonable to talk about pain in a sort of broad sense, that it encompasses both types. Just as she describes her physical pain, usually with symbolism of the weapon.
That's one of the ways that not only she, but almost everybody describes. And I think this is an important feature. that you kind of bring out. That one of the ways that we describe our pain is in terms of a weapon. That's really fascinating. And what do you mean by weapon? What are the words that are used?
Well, there's all sorts of descriptions. One of the most important resources that pain specialists do when diagnosing and treating pain is to show patients these lists of words, the McGill pain questionnaire, and list of words such as stabbing and shooting and pressing and boring and lancinating, all of which sort of imply this the presence of some kind of a weapon, whether it's a gun, whether it's a knife, whether it's fire, whether it's some kind of great weight, something that could potentially damage the body. That's kind of how we
envision. What we use to describe is what might have happened with a weapon, which is kind of fascinating.
Yes.
Since you think about our primitive selves coming up trying to describe to someone else if we could, you know, we would probably use physical symbols of weapons. You know, we would see the stabbing or something like that.
Even though we may never have been stabbed.
Right. And it's just like people have all felt fire in their stomachs, you know, like if they have an ulcer, they could describe a fire that goes on inside, or stabbing pains and nerve pains, and certainly migraines, which I'm very familiar with, and migraine pain can be described in ways that are, there are many. There's the stabbing, there's the throbbing, there's all the other pains. The McGill pain questionnaire, I was just looking at it as you spoke.
Mm-hmm.
Among the, let me just read you some of the words that they use in the McGill. You can think about your own pain that you might have. Would you describe it as, this is choice number one, choose one of these: flickering, quivering, pulsing, throbbing, beating, or pounding. Okay, that's one. Number two, how does it kind of move? Is it jumping, flashing, or shooting? You know, you could talk about a shooting pain. Number three, is it pricking, boring, drilling, stabbing? Is it sharp? Is it cutting? Is it lacerating? Is it pinching, pressing, gnawing, cramping, crushing, tugging, pulling, wrenching? These are all words used for pain. Tingling, itchy, smarting, stinging, dull, a dull pain, right? Sore, hurting, aching, heavy. Now, don't you think that's enough words for pain? No, we have more. Tender, taut, rasping, splitting pain, we talk about. Tiring, exhausting, sickening, suffocating pain. Fearful, frightful, terrifying, punishing, grueling, cruel, vicious, killing pain. My gosh. Wretched pain, binding pain, blinding pain. Annoying pain, troublesome pain, miserable pain, and spreading, radiating, penetrating, piercing, tight, numb, drawing, squeezing, tearing, cool pain, cold pain, freezing pain, nagging pain, nauseating pain, agonizing pain, dreadful pain, I'm going to commit suicide, torturing pain. These are the ways that they are described, and then they ask you to describe them according to how often. And then you have the brief pain, the momentary pain, or the transient pain. Then you have the continuous pain, the steady pain, or the constant pain. These are the things that the doctors people have to go through to try to get you to describe what the pain is. And of course, again, the skepticism is there right at the beginning. What are you describing and why are you telling me about it? And then the unfortunate thing is for most people who hear about pain, it automatically engenders a desire or a need to do something about it. If you're a parent and somebody tells you they have a pain, it's almost like you have to do something about it. So we don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear about your pain, you know? Especially don't talk to me about love pain. Don't talk to me about these other pains. I wonder, Steph, do you think that women are more likely to listen to pain reports than men are? I'll bet they are. I'll bet there's a biological reason for that.
I would think so.
You know, think about it. Just think about it for the sake of survival. For as we're coming up the tree, who is it that you go to when you're hurt? You don't go to the other male animal. You go to the female animal. She's going to nurse you. She's going to...
Supposedly, women have more words. They use more words, and they use language. So they also have more mirror neurons, and so they can probably feel and empathize much more.
I think, a very good point. More mirror neurons.
There was something in your book about mm-hmm. mirror neurons. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Let's get to that. Sure, talk about mirror neurons and pain, David.
Well, one of the common sort of themes with trying to describe pain is, as you were reading down that list of words on the McGill pain questionnaire, is all of them sort of evoke some kind of a visual image, penetrating one, or crushing. One thinks of the thing that's penetrating. One has some kind of a visual image, which is critical, because part of the problem with pain, whether for the person who's experiencing pain or whether for the person on the outside of pain, is that they can't see anything, and you need to give them something to see. That's why those words are so evocative. One of the other ways that we can talk about pain is to see pain, to project our pain onto the outside world in some way, so that we talk about, say, when we're feeling blue, that the sort of sky is looking gloomy, that we can see something that sort of represents how we feel inside. So
can you do that with a physical pain? It's like a break in a wall. Would you describe it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That feels like what's happening inside me, that break in the wall. It's another sort of effective way to visualize pain and have someone else see it as well. And seeing, again, is believing. We have to make sure that other people recognize our pain.
And maybe just aside for a while, but I know your specialty is skin disorders as mm-hmm. well. Is there, among the skin disorders, there's both shingles, mm-hmm. I know has horrific pain mm-hmm. associated with it. How would you describe shingle pain?
You know what? The pain from shingles, there's several ways that one has pain from shingles. First of all, it causes these blisters on the skin, which cause pain. But it also causes inflammation to the nerves underneath the skin. So it causes not only that skin pain, but it has nerve pain as well.
So a blister pain itself is more like a pressure pain?
Is more like, probably people would describe that in terms of heat, fire, whereas...
This is an unbroken blister pain.
Right.
There's a broken blister and an unbroken blister, right? I mean, when a blister is effulgent, when it's full,
uh-huh.
it has a certain pressure on the nerves.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? When the blister breaks, mm-hmm. you're now dealing with air,
mm-hmm.
making contact with the mm-hmm. blister, which is a whole different feeling, right?
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I'm asking you,
yes,
as the doctor.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, okay.
And then the nerve pain could be all sorts of things. It could be shooting. It could be throbbing. It depends.
How does nerve pain happen from a broken blister? How does it happen?
Well,
what happens?
It's not actually the pain in terms of shingles. The problem starts in the nerve and then spreads to the skin.
Hmm.
So what happens with shingles is that the chickenpox virus that you had been infected with at one point in your life basically stays dormant in the nerves, and then for some reason, later in life, it gets reactivated, and it comes back in the form of shingles.
Mm-hmm.
But starts with the nerve and inflammation of the nerve, and then sort of spreads to the overlying skin.
And what are your first symptoms of that? You like outbursts in the skin?
Well, sometimes you can experience a pain before you see the skin lesions. But I have a friend right now who has the shingles, and he usually, when you're younger it's not as bad. It really can wreak havoc on those who are older, both acutely when you have the shingles and then afterwards in something called postherpetic neuralgia, which then becomes a chronic type of pain.
Older people tend to feel pain at higher levels than younger people do? Do you think it's more, one of the things I used to realize, I used to have a friend who had chronic pain, and I noticed that he was a very, very sensitive guy, right? And I had a suspicion that because he was so sensitive, he and I, being the insensitive clod that I am, would have a different experience of this pain. Now, he was the kind of guy who, if there was a breeze, he would feel it right away and turn around and say how beautiful the breeze was. He felt everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, if we both had the same pain amount, would he experience more pain than I would, because I have such a defense that protects me from feeling pain, because, pain is just pain to me.
Mm-hmm.
But to him, it might be excruciating.
Mm-hmm.
So could the very same pain be to two different people, even though it's the same amount of pain, to one person, the sensitive type of person, it's excruciating. To the other person, it's like,
I wouldn't say that the pain, the variable is whatever triggers the pain. So I think we all have different susceptibility thresholds to pain levels. We're finding more and more that we have there's a genetic basis of people who are more sensitive to pain than other people. There, in addition to sort of a genetic thing, there's also the emotional state when you receive that trigger. I mean, you had mentioned childbirth. In some ways, the pain of childbirth is much more bearable for some, because there is something great that's going to be coming at the end of that pain. I'm not saying people welcome the pain of childbirth, but there is something that's good that's going to come at the end of that pain. So the point being that certain emotional things can
it's like the pain of exercise,
right?
Like you could exercise, and like I was exercising yesterday and my muscles burned. I went, oh, I felt like that, and I liked it.
Right
It's okay, right. I know it's got good, right, associated,
exactly,
with it.
Exactly.
If that just happened for no reason at all, I'd say, oops, mm-hmm, something's really wrong. So in the communication of pain, you have to understand that the person who's describing the pain to you may have a different pain threshold than you do.
Mm-hmm.
So we cannot get a common expression of the pain. We just can't get, describe it to me, and you say cutting to you may be different to me. It may be an itch to me.
Well, I think the thing about that is these intensity scales, this 1 to 10 kind of thing.
That's kind of a farce.
That's really, very difficult if we all agree that we don't sort of experience certain things as painful, or we do so differently, one person from the other. Then how do we use these scales? What's a 5 for one person could be a 10 for another person.
Absolutely understand.
So if we're trying to get at the intensity level of the pain, I think the best route is yes, maybe to use the number, but attach it with some kind of a significance for the person's life. This is so bad, for example, that I can't sleep at night. It wakes me up from sleep. This is so bad that I can't walk. That's how bad this pain is. That gives me a much better sense of someone's pain than it's 9 out of 10. I don't know what 9 out of 10 means.
Very interesting. It's so interesting, too, because there's an intolerance of pain. People don't like you to feel it. I remember once I went to a dentist, and I was going to go somewhere where I had to make sure I had nothing in my system. I forgot what kind of testing I was going to go through. And the doctor was going to do it. It was an important filling I had to get. And he said, I'll give you Novocaine. I said, I don't want Novocaine. I don't want any drugs. I don't want to take anything. He said, but it's going to be excruciating. It's right on a nerve. I said, okay, I'll white knuckle it. Now, white knuckle means you grab the chair, you're going to feel excruciating pain, and you're just going to go through it. It's just pain. And so she, the doctor, was a good-hearted person, and she's drilling away, and I'm grabbing onto the chair because it hurts a lot, and I'm still, you know, get your job done. And she had to stop. I said, why are you stopping? She said, because you're in pain. I said, but it's okay. It's just pain. She said, no, I can't treat somebody who's feeling pain. And I went, wow, you can't stand me feeling pain. You can't stand it. It's you. Is that not me? I'm fine. I'll just go through it and then, you know, I'll get over it. Not that I'm so brave. It's just that I know that this was just pain that's going to last for 3 minutes, you know, and I'll get through it.
I think it's very interesting because I think that when you really believe that someone else is in pain or you actually really see the pain of another person, it's intolerable, almost as if it was your own pain. It's very hard to sort of be in the presence of pain and not wish it were unfelt, gone. Except in those instances, you ask, well, then how could people torture other people? Or how could mm-hmm. Well, in those instances, one denies the fact of the pain in the other person. One chooses not to see the pain in the other person. And then can inflict pain and not worry about this. But I think truly, if you really see another person suffering and believe that other person, you would not be human if you didn't wish it were otherwise.
My guest, the name of the book is The Language of Pain. It's pretty. It's a well-written book. It's finding words, compassion, and relief. My doctor who's been with me, my guest has been Dr. David Biro, B-I-R-O, who has the personal experience of going through it, but also he writes as a literary scholar. So it gives you an idea of how to deal with this. David, I want to thank you very, very much for being with us today. We're going to be taking your calls a little later, my friends, after our break at 212-209-2900 because we have dedicated ourselves this week to taking your calls. That's what we decided we were going to do, make sure we get as many calls in as possible before the fund drive. But we're going to make an announcement about the fund drive. I've just learned the fund drive is not going to start next week. It's going to be following the week, happening the week after, so we will be with you again next Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. David, before we close, any final words that you might want to put out there?
The final sort of message, I think, is that language is really important when it comes to pain. If we really want to get the best possible help, if we really want to get relief for our pain, we really need to be able to communicate it. And I think we really need to try, even though it's difficult, to put it into some kind of word so the other people, doctors and family and friends, could understand. That's the best chance that we're going to find relief.
I want to thank you very much. Thank you very much for being with us. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Stephanie Dombra with us as well. We're going to be taking a short break. And when we take our break, after our music, we will come back to you with more of this wonderful stuff. Why don't we play you something really interesting today and different? How about a little... Sometimes people think that they're getting pain as a punishment for something that they did. You know, the Lord's punishing you. I remember one time I was sitting on a chair and I said something blasphemous and a clock, when I was a kid, and a clock hit me on the head and my mother looked at me and said, see, God did that. And I said, yeah, that's where our whole concept comes from, that pain may be punishment for something we did wrong. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's 1:30 here at WBAI 99.5 FM. Here's a little music related to that. When we come back, we will continue with your phone calls at 212-209-2900. Here's a little Bonnie Raitt for you.
You can tell me one thing, babe. tell me one thing, but I know it ain't true.
Arma, yesterday I put some callers on hold during the break, but none of them were there afterwards. Do you want me to do the same thing again or just take them as they come in?
Yes, take, no, no, put them on hold.
Tell me one thing, but you know
whatever you think best.
All right, I'll grab them now, put them on hold, and remind them to pay attention.
And a damn thing you can do. You can keep sliding, baby. Keep on sliding, and one day you're gonna slip and fall.
Bonnie Raitt with Habib Koite. That's Habib right there. Retribution from Blues Around the World. Hey, retribution. You know, so this is the idea. Many people think that they suffer in pain because they've done something wrong. And for years, religion has been telling you that, just as nutrition tells you that, just as your doctor tells you that, just as anybody selling anything tells you that your pain is your fault. That's what they do, you know? Oh, yeah, well, you know, you smoked. If you have a breathing problem, dead, did you smoke? First question. Did you cause your pain? Did you drink? Oh, you got bad kidneys? Did you drink a lot? You know, and right away, it's almost like there's always looking to blame people for their pain. Now, maybe they're right. Maybe there is a cause. Maybe there is a relationship between the two. Not a kind thing to do. Let's talk about OPQRST for a moment. OPQRST, you've never heard of this, did you, Stephanie? Huh? Never heard of the OPQRST? Well, I'll tell you. It's a mnemonic initialism. Because it's mnemonic. It has it's a phrase of its own, the OPQRST. Used by people performing first aid or medical providers in order to facilitate taking a person's symptoms and histories of anything. It's specifically adapted when a person has a heart attack, So each letter, O-P-Q-R-S-T, stands for a very important thing, okay? Okay, and sometimes they don't use the O, but the O-P-Q-R-S-T goes like this. O, what is the onset of the event? O is for onset. What the patient was doing when it started, were they active, inactive, stressed, whether the patient believes that they actively prompted the pain, and whether the onset was sudden, gradual, or part of an ongoing chronic condition. That's what the guy wants to know when the hospital, the ambulance shows up. When did this start? Onset. O. P. Provocation or palpitation. Whether any movement, pressure, such as palpitation, or other external factors makes the problem better or worse. Now, that could mean, and you ever notice that doctors push on your stomach? You know, they put pressure on you in different places. They want to know if that makes it better or worse, because they're looking for organ disorders and broken things inside your body that they can't see. So that's the O and the P. Q, quality of the pain. Here's what David was talking about. This is the patient's description of the pain. Questions can be open-ended, such as, will you describe it for me? Or leading, such as, sharp, dull, crushing, burning, tearing, intermittent, constant, or throbbing. Those kind of questions the physician or the physician's aide or the nurse would ask you. So we have the Q is the quality of the pain. R is the region of the pain and the radiation. Where the pain is in your body and whether it radiates or moves to any other areas. This could give indications for conditions such as myocardial infarctions, which can radiate through the jaw and arm, or other referred pains can provide clues to underlying medical causes. So R is region. S, remember we're doing O-P-Q-R-S-T. S is the severity. The pain score. This is where they do the 0 to 10. How big is this pain? How bad is it? And T is time, and time stands for the history of the pain, which is how long the condition has been going on, how has it changed since its onset, whether or not it's ever happened before, whether or not it may have changed since onset, and when the pain stopped, if you no longer currently feel it. OPQRST. All of these things, just to remind you again, onset, provocation, quality, region, severity, and time. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Pain is such a funny thing. But we're taking your calls now. 212-209-2900. We are taking calls this week as much as we can get our hands on. And we'd like to talk to you about your own pain or relationship to pain. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille.
There are no calls.
Okay, there we go. See what happens when I say there are callers. You wait for a while, and then because we have to wait for you to dial up and get on for us, 212-209-2900. We're open right now.
Now there's two.
Okay, let's take a call, Ken. Thank you. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hello.
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 Hello, Armin.
How are you?
This is Lior. You know, it reminded me many years ago when I worked for a Dr. Curcio. And people would come with discomfort and pain, like a cold, a sore throat. And my main function was to have them understand that they were in a detox and that it wasn't a bad cold. It was a good cold. And that made all the difference in their shifting and to be able to endure and see it in a different way.
Very important. Very,
so
very
I just
important.
Thought I would bring this up in terms of the attitude towards your pain.
Very good, Leora. Thank you very much. I'm going to talk about that a little bit.
All right. I thought I'd share it with you.
Thank
it's
you so
my
much.
Pleasure.
Sure.
And even a detox, when we used to fast them, and they had to go through all the experience of ridding themselves of the, of the junk. I'm saying that in a certain plain way. And that's very discomforting.
Sure.
And the whole concept of your attitude, and it just made all the difference.
Viora, thank you. Let me address that issue, okay?
Sure.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And you know what, Leora brings up a very good point. Because when you think about going on a diet, you go on a diet and you start to get hungry. Yeah, I'm hungry. I have hunger pangs. But it's a good hunger pang. The same thing with exercise, you know? Those pains are okay pains. Now, I remember we interviewed recently a person from the Mayo Clinic. And the Mayo Clinic people said, in their pain center, we don't allow people to talk about pain. We don't want people to talk about pain because as a result of their talking about pain, very often they give the pain a life of its own. And by giving it a life of its own, you make it bigger than it is. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hello. Turn off your radio.
Yeah, hi there.
Hi there.
I have a type of pain that is positional. I suffer from a condition known as spontaneous cerebral spinal fluid leak.
Yes, could you turn your radio off?
Yes, it is off.
Okay, yes.
And so my spinal fluid leaks out of many different parts of my dura mater along my spine. And when I'm laying down, I don't feel any pain, but the moment I sit vertical or stand up, I get a very sharp, stabbing pain sensation in my eyes and in my forehead. And it's rather debilitating, and I've just recently been approved for Medicare because I've been on Social Security for 2 years now. And, it's due to a connective tissue disorder, probably.
Let me ask you a question related to this.
Sure.
So how have you dealt with the emotional part of this debilitating condition that you have? I mean, does it depress you completely? Do you give up at times? Do you feel like you're fighting it in some level?
Right.
Tell me.
Well, part of the problem is I'm only 29 years old, and I was 27 when this condition developed. Previous to that, I had been incredibly active. I had worked on an ambulance as an EMT. Hiking and camping were things that I did almost every weekend.
So how do you deal with it now?
Well, one thing is I make sure I see a psychologist every week to talk about that.
Good. Does your psychologist help you in relationship to the pain itself in some way? How does he help? Or she?
Well,
what do they do?
He guides me through it, through meditation.
Okay.
Of how to close my eyes and how to visualize the pain not hurting me as bad.
So actually, by using your mind, okay. So you're in, what's your name, by the way?
Baruch, Hebrew.
Baruch.
Yeah, exactly.
Baruch.
Baruch. Baruch.
Yeah, yeah. Now you see, this is a very important point because we have a relationship with the pain itself, and then we have resisting the pain. One of the things I learned a long time ago, I'll never forget, my friend Charlotte and I were in an amusement park, and we had nothing to do. We were killing some time waiting to do a lecture in Tarrytown. We were in Rye Playland, I think it was, and there was this amusement park, and we both don't go on roller coasters. And I said, Charlotte, let's go on the roller coaster and see what it is that's so scary. So we both went on the roller coaster, and we found out that at first it was very frightening because we were holding on so tight. And then we said to each other, let's let go and let's not resist at all. And we found out that there was no fear. So there is something about on the roller coaster of pain that if you're fighting it, you almost add to the pain in some way. I'm saying hypothetically. Now, that's just coming from a guy who doesn't have what you have. But what you're saying is your psychologist, what he does with you, is he helps you not fight it. He helps you ride the roller coaster.
Right, exactly. He helps guide me through it.
That's very valuable.
And I also take an antidepressant every night. It helps me sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And also just keeps the mood elevated, which if I didn't have it, I could only imagine that my mood would be even more depressed than it currently is.
Well, good, Baruch. Thank you very much for contributing.
My pleasure. Thank you
for calling in. 212-209-2900. We're taking your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there. And what's your name? Oh, we lost that one. We'll try again. 212-209-2900. Another caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Armand, thank you for the show.
You're welcome.
It's a very beautiful show. I'm from Haiti.
I know
you can
are.
Imagine what I'm going through
yes,
right
I
now.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what hurt the most? Besides that, I feel like I will never be able to go back to live in my country again, as I was planning to.
Mm.
It's 18 months ago, I moved a family that I've adopted, a mother, a father, and three kids. I moved them out of the same area. But the grandmother was left behind because she and the daughter-in-law never got along. Can you believe the husband, whose mother died in this, blamed me for her mother's death, for his mother's death? He said, I am the reason why his mother died without him being there to save her.
Yeah, well, people do that all the time. What's your name?
My name is Sherry.
Sherry, you know, when people have big losses like that, like him losing his mother, you look around and you say, where's the enemy? And you pick anybody you can. You know, Sherry, I'm so sorry because so much of this happens around this tragic time. I've been in touch with many people from Haiti, and I hear blame, and I hear blame, and I hear it. It's just a natural thing to see who's at fault, see who's at fault, somebody's at fault. The real truth of it is, if he had to face it, he lost his mother. You know? I mean, he has to deal with an enormous pain. And if it helps him get through by blaming you, it's just temporary. Eventually, I'm sure it will be okay.
But I felt like I could have been there to help him emotionally. Now, I can't help feeling upset with him.
Yes.
I don't even want to talk to him.
So now you have this resistance about even going there to help, right?
I wasn't going to go there to, well, no, because as a registered nurse, I felt like I had to be there. But
yeah.
I have concern about my safety.
Sure. Sure.
I've never been that afraid in my life.
Yeah.
But I'm still going. As things comes down, I feel like I have to be there to really start the grieving process. I don't even listen anymore. I don't watch TV. It's like I'm in limbo.
Yes, you and many people I know are in limbo. And it is, we're dealing with one of the greatest tragedies of all history, you know. And of course, your mind would suspend you. It would just say, get suspended. Now, if you want to talk to anybody about it, and if you'd ever like to find a counselor about it, there are a number of places that are happening now. LifeNet is a new place that I learned about today. Okay. LifeNet is for Haitian people by Haitian people, and providing psychological services. And also we, here at the DeMel Center, if you ever want to come and talk to one of my people here, they are happy to offer their services at no charge.
As a matter of fact, I have sent you my nephew.
You did?
Yeah.
And is this recently or before?
About 4 months ago or so.
Oh, good, good. What was it about?
A young man.
Well, there are many.
He has issues, but I think you can really help him.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Let me tell you, I pound over the mother's head. Take him to Armand. And he's been going there.
Once again, my heart goes out to you for your amazing loss, and whatever we
but
can
But you know
do.
Why? I felt like I have to be resilient because so much needs to be done.
Well, that's another feeling that's very important. You're so right. We all have to be resilient, and you have to be resilient, just as everybody there has said the same thing. What are we going to do? We have to bounce.
But I don't think I will ever feel safe down there anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a very important question. But did you ever feel safe down there?
I used to.
Really?
Until 6 months ago, every time I have to travel, I feel heavy-chested, so I wasted 2 tickets.
So you felt, until recently, you felt safe down there, you're saying?
Yes,
and
until
then about 6 months ago, you stopped feeling safe. So maybe your stopping feeling safe doesn't have to do with the earthquake, but maybe you...
No.
Maybe
with the situation that was down there already.
Yeah.
The raping and the kidnapping.
Well, that's been there for as many years as I remember.
But I never felt that it could happen to me until last August.
And oh, I see.
I blew 2 tickets. I made reservation. When the day came, I'm like, nah.
Yeah. Thank you
anyway,
for calling
I don't know.
Sherry. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening.
Okay, I'll be speaking
to you. You have a great show. You're the best.
Thank you, Sherry.
Hugs Bye-bye. And kisses.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, huge hugs and kisses back. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Armand.
Hey.
How you doing?
Good. Who is this?
This is Mark.
Hello, Mark.
I have a question about pain and tolerance.
Yes.
Well, I remember, you know, in previous programs, you were talking about the Novocaine and the dentist. Something happened to me with my foot. I think I took that story, but maybe applied it the wrong way. So what happened was I had a heel spur, and, you know, it was throbbing. Every time I walk, it hurts. So I put an ice pack on the heel spur and, you know, on my foot. And, you know, the pain was intense, you know, like it was so cold, you know, having the ice pack. But I kept it on. I kept it on the foot. But what I ended up doing was eventually burning my foot. I gave myself frostbite.
Hmm.
So I guess a part of me didn't.
Wait,
guess,
how do you do that with an ice pack? Ice packs are insulated. They can't seem, unless, how would you do that with an ice pack?
The ice pack was, I guess, too cold.
So what, did you make it out of a bag or something? Did you put ice in a bag?
No, it was one of the ice packs you get in the store.
Oh, I thought those prevented. Okay,
yeah,
but thank you. Anyway, so you gave yourself frostbite.
Yeah, I ended up leaving it on too long, so I ended up giving myself like an ice burn, which I never even knew that was possible.
Yes, that I know is possible. Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is, how do you know when to listen to your pain? You know, like, you fought through it without taking the Novocaine, but, you know, was I...
Oh, I listen to my pain all the time. I really believe if something goes wrong with me and I feel aches and pains, I say, oh, somebody's giving me a message. Sure,
yeah.
No, I listen to it all the time, but there are times when I will selectively say, like when exercising, this hurts, but I'm going to go past it. But I think it is a matter of an intelligent decision to make, you know, one that you make through with your mind when you know all the facts.
Sure.
I'm sorry if I led you astray.
Well, I mean, but, you know, I guess you've also talked about how pain is a way to show you that something's wrong. So
that's
you have to listen to it, you know. So
yeah.
I guess it's like that balance, you know.
Thank you very much for calling in. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks so much.
Right.
Bye.
Yes. Death is nature's way of telling you something is really wrong. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another
Armand.
Call. Hi there.
How are you?
Good. Who is this?
My name's Mike.
Hello, Mike.
I know you don't have too much time.
Oh, Mike, I'm losing your call. What are we? Oh, you're on a cell phone, huh? Oh, I lost it. You better pop to another caller. We got time for one more quick caller. Hi there. This is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. Turn your radio off.
Am I on the air?
Yeah, but you have to turn your radio off.
Oh, hello?
Yes. Okay. We've got 2 minutes. Hello there.
I just wanted to tell you a story of how you guys are talking about a lot of psychological pain. I wanted to tell you a story about how I had to endure physical pain when my mom closed the door on my hand.
Ouch.
And I was at first I was just like, I screamed, and then it was just like, and as I'm running water under my hand under the sink, I just started to laugh hysterically. I just out of nowhere, I found the humor in the situation, and I just started to laugh. Even though I was in so much pain, I started laughing. My mom's looking at me like I'm crazy, but you know what? The pain actually was actually a lot less.
Absolutely.
Because we rarely take into effect like how powerful our minds are and how like we magnify the amount of pain that we go through.
Well,
like,
I thank you psychologically. I thank you very much for that, but I'll tell you something. It's not only the power of the mind, it's the power of the brain. When you laugh so hard, you release endorphins. And
mm-hmm.
so you get a nature's painkiller. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what a wise thing for you to do. Plus,
yeah, I just did it out of the blue. I was just like, you know what, why don't I just try laughing?
Nice idea. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Right.
Hey, bye-bye.
Sure. This is Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. Contrary to what we may have said before, we will be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. for more programming. Special thanks, Stephanie. This has been interesting, don't you think?
welcome, Armand. Yes, it's wonderful.
212-209. Oh, no, no more calls. We'll be back with you Tuesday at 1 p.m. If you want to get a copy of today's program, you can go to WBAI.org, a wonderful site to visit, or thepositivemind.com. I will be back with you on Tuesday at 1.
Scott Heron, unknown bluesologist, speaking to you on Free Speech Radio.